Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan. It's my Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next, actually, 3 hours. The first 2 hours is Community Connections, and the third hour, of course, is Choice Tunes. We've got the person selected. They're on their way. They've given me a list of the music that they want to hear, and they're going to tell us all about why it's part of their life. But and I should mention, between 1 and 2 is our legal hour. So if you've got any questions, can't talk to you about a case, but if you've got any questions you want to ask our legal experts, give Greg a ring in the office now on 59-615-9915. 59-615-9915. Greg will take them down. We can't do talk back, but Greg will take them down and bring them in and we'll have a talk. But the first hour, we've got with us Anchor. Now, we talked to Heidi, who's the CEO at Anchor, on a number of occasions. So this day, she's with me in the studio. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you, Alan. Lovely to be back.
It's great to have you in too. Now, the first thing and one of the major things we want to talk about is the end of the financial year. And I guess you're hoping that companies might have money available or organisations that they just desperately want to give away. Am I right?
You're right, Alan. Yeah, we're running our end of financial year campaign again. Our story this year is about a young girl called Stephanie, who was in kinship care with a family member.
What's kinship care?
Kinship care is when children are removed from their birth parents because of abuse, and they're placed with a family member, usually a grandparent, sometimes an auntie.
Well, so it's different to foster care. They still stay with the family.
Correct. Yep. Yes. Yeah. So Stephanie, was in quite a bad way, I guess, when we first met her when she was about 12. She'd been in a very difficult situation for a number of years, and finally the department removed her. She had, she was going into that year 7 and really had never turned up, and yet she was quite a smart young girl. So Anchor took her on, and one of our case managers, Ninas, really formed a fabulous relationship with Stephanie. So what we did for Stephanie is that, we got her going. She didn't want to go out of the house to begin with, but she has now returned.
Was she that damaged, was she?
She was. She was. She's returned to school now, and one of the things that our fighting fund, I call it our fighting fund, was able to do was to purchase tutoring for her. So it was a bit of a catch-up tutoring. Yep. And once she'd had that catch-up, she sort of, flourished, really, because she didn't feel that she was behind the other kids. So our fighting fund can, does things in more of an sort of urgent situation and can fund things or does fund things that the government doesn't fund. So contrary to what people think, the government actually doesn't fund everything that Anchor does.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So another great example, I think, was Chris, who was a single father of two autistic children. He was in our homelessness programs and his car broke down and he didn't have enough money to fix it. So we dipped into our fighting fund and we fixed his car. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to take the children to school or to appointments and things. And that's the sort of thing that happens in people's lives. With Chris, the single dad, sometimes these things really spiral and then children can come into care or be removed for a period of time because parents are not able to look after them. So the fighting fund, as I say, we can dip into it for small amounts. We've been building it up over a couple of years, and this end of financial year, we're really hoping to contribute to it again. We're looking to raise $40,000. Yep. We're well on our way. I think we're about 49% of the way through, but here we are ticking away in June.
And so we want to get it done fairly quickly.
Yeah, we do want to get it done. Because it really enables us to do those things that government funding doesn't cover.
And say in the case of Chris, unfortunately then the children suffer again, don't they? Because correct. If he can't take them to school, then they lose school time. And not only school time, I guess the other thing is to is sport and things like so that, because otherwise they just miss out.
Yeah. Well, these kids also had a lot of appointments with doctors and paediatricians and things like that. So he was stuck. So that was, you know, a pretty important thing for us to just find a bit of money for. But, you know, we do things like that. I'm just looking for another example. You know, we've got a foster carer, and we love our foster carers, as you know, Alan.
Yep.
One of our foster carers has two children living with her in foster care. She took them on for a very short period of time, or what she thought was going to be a short period of time.
It didn't turn out that way.
No, 8 years later, they're still there, and she's doing a fabulous job.
Yep.
But they're a boy and a girl, and they get on well, but she's only got a two-bedroom house. Yep. So the sort of thing that we'd like to do for her is to build another bedroom on the back of her house.
Yep.
And that, of course, takes quite a bit of money, but you know, what it means is that, you know, she wants those children to live with her until they're grown up.
Yep.
If they go to university or do whatever they do, she's happy to provide them with a home. But, you know, got to the end of where she can actually have them sharing a bedroom. So things like that are not funded. They're not funded by anybody, but they're critical for those children. And I would argue that, you know, maybe spending, say, $25,000 or $30,000 on building an extra bedroom will save us hundreds of thousands of dollars if those children were to leave that placement and perhaps, you know, be homeless or go to jail or whatever.
But apart from the actual cost, we should, as a society, we should be looking after those young people. Otherwise, their future suffers too.
That's right. So it's not a lot to ask, but as I say, we've been building up our fighting fund to be able to do things like this that are over and above what, you know, government funding provides us.
All right, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. We'll be talking to Heidi further.
You want to go? I'm going to some.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I'm talking to Heidi, the CEO of Anchor. Heidi, you were just mentioning this idea, you know, that maybe you put another bedroom on the back of a person's house and that.
Yeah.
I guess one of the things that we should make clear is that just because, like, a foster carer, and we're going to talk about them later on, gives up a lot. I mean, they're supporting these children, all that sort of stuff. And so as a society, we have to help those foster carers whenever we can, because they can't all the time have their hands in the pocket, and I bet they do.
They certainly do, Alan, and I think, you know, there's certainly a big divide between what it costs to raise a child and, you know, what foster carers are reimbursed.
I'll bet.
There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
I think it's even more difficult for kinship carers, who get even less of a payment.
Do they?
It's less than foster carers. And also, too, it's, you know, often older people who are kinship carers, very often women, very often grandparents, sometimes are in rented accommodation, very often on a pension.
Yeah, I was just going to say the pension.
Yeah, so, you know.
And the pension's not designed to cover anything like that,
No. So it's pretty tough for all carers, really, because, I mean, the cost of raising children, I mean, most, you know, is big. And I think that, you know, a lot of our younger couples in the world now are choosing not to have many children, one or two, because they realise that, you know, the cost of it. So yes, you're right, Alan, that they do dip into their pockets a lot. And, you know, they give up a lot of, you know, you hear foster carers sort of talking about they don't spend as much time with their extended families, because sometimes it's difficult to take the children to family gatherings. You know, they're often having to do things on weekends, like get the kids ready to go and see their birth family and things like that. So it's a big commitment.
I was going to ask you that, like, in these... But with the foster carers, and we're talking about them because this is where some of the money is going to go to help them.
Yes, it is.
And so we're still talking fundraising. But
yes.
So they have to, as part of it, they have to take them back to see their birth parents, do they?
Well, not. They don't necessarily have to do the driving or whatever. They've got to get them ready. Sometimes they do drop them off at different places. Just depends on the situation. But nevertheless, it's kind of they've got to be available during that time, you know, because sometimes birth parents, unfortunately, don't turn up. So they, you know, need to go and pick them back up again from McDonald's or wherever the contact is. And, you know, and foster carers say that It's really tough on kids to see their birth families when they don't really understand why they're not living with them.
Yeah, why they're not there.
And so they'll come home and they'll be very sad. They can be very upset. And so it can take the rest of the day for a foster carer to settle the child back down again. And, you know, it's just really tough on kids.
And so I guess some of those foster carers would have children of their own too,
yes,
wouldn't they?
Yes, many do. We certainly encourage people to have their children a little bit older, like, you know, sort of more late primary school.
Oh, so they can understand it all?
Yeah, just so that it's not quite so impactful on them, you know. I mean, I think having really little kids is probably quite an ask. We have a lot of the foster carers that are around these days are single women who are a bit older now. They took it up 20 years ago or whatever, and now they're older and saying, well, probably not going to be able to do this for much longer. So we have same-sex couples, we have couples without children, we have singles, you know, we have all realms of people, young, old. Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to fundraising.
Yes, that's
what we really want to talk about.
Yes.
So I guess you're looking for corporations or but I guess even Mr. and Mrs. Archer, anybody who can donate some money.
Absolutely. All donations are tax deductible. And so a number of people, you know, we know donate sort of right towards the 30th of June order to claim that back on their tax. So all tax deductable.
And you don't mind where they do it as long as they do it this month?
No, that's right. That's right. We certainly encourage businesses, you know, maybe they could donate on behalf of the business or do some fundraising. We have the lovely ladies at Meyer Eastland who raise a lot of money for us, actually. Yes, they do. They do a lot of bakes, you know, home bakes, and they do raffles and they do events, and they're just fabulous, and they Absolutely. Love us. They love it, and they love making an impact, actually. So, you know, yeah, great for businesses to maybe take up Anchor as their charity of choice. It'd be fantastic. Love to talk to them.
That'd be terrific. Mm. So, obviously, on the website, there's somewhere there where they can fundraise?
Donate. Yes. Yep. So if you go to anchor.org.au, you'll see a very prominent donate now button.
Big button.
It's a big button. People can just click that and then click through that. So it's very easy to donate. And then you get your remittance back, and then you can put that into the tax man.
And so I guess what we're saying now, that none of this money goes into salaries or anything, does it?
No.
And we need to do that, because some people have got a bit frightened with the bushfires that, you know, a lot of the money didn't go where it should have gone. But in this, if you're talking a fighting fund or whatever you call your fund, it's just there for that reason.
Yes,
isn't it?
It is. I mean, that's not to say that funding that we get in, we need to take a corporate fee from it, because, you know, it's quite a thing to run a safe and compliant business these days with all the rules and whatever. But certainly this fighting fund we keep separate and just, you know, just for these emergencies, so we can do things.
Right. Mm. And they can fund anything, can they?
Yeah,
if a child needed a computer or something like that?
Yes, yes. So anything the government won't fund.
Yep.
So we obviously try and get government funding first.
Absolutely.
You know, for things. But you know, if you're like Chris, the dad, if there's some emergency, then we can just quickly dip into it. We've done all sorts of things with the fund. You know, we've had, you know, iPads that we bought for kids. Sometimes, you know, we've paid an extra period of rent for a family you know, just really, you know, run out of money. Utilities sometimes. Just depends on the situation. But you know, the statistics are that, you know, homelessness is on the rise.
You've said that a number of times.
Yes,
haven't you?
It's the number of people over the last 5 years into homelessness is risen by 24%.
And you're fearful that it's going to get worse too, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's, you know, people need to take stock that for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, it's got even worse, with their homelessness increasing by 42%, which is nearly double non-Aboriginal people. So there's certainly people that are doing it, you know, harder.
Yep.
The fastest growing age group of people facing homeless are 12 to 18-year-olds. Who?
12?
Yeah, 12 to 18-year-olds that probably come in with their parents, but 44,000 across Australia come in on their own each year.
You've got nobody for them at all?
No. So so I think that's pretty alarming.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in terms of out-of-home care, children that are needing to be removed from birth parents, that's also growing. So, you know, around 9 in every 100 babies, children and young people are currently in out-of-home care placements in Victoria.
Terrible.
It's a lot of kids.
A lot of kids. Let's just take a break and we'll be back with more with Heidi.
Yep.
You were young and your heart wasn't open, but you used to say, live and let live. But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say, live and let die. Live and let die.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and we're talking to Heidi, who's the Anchor CEO. Heidi, you were saying before, very early in the interview, about the department coming in and removing children. I don't want to go too deeply into it, and I don't want to distress too many people, but we just need to understand, first of all, how or what flags to the department, hey, this child should be removed, and then what's the process that happens after that?
Okay. So essentially it starts with any member of the public or teachers, doctors, etc., who are called mandatory reporters, reporting a concern that a child may be at risk of harm to the Department of Families, Fairness and Housing.
Just harm or like malnutrition and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, any kind of harm. Right. Yeah, any kind of neglect and any form of physical, sexual, emotional abuse. Yeah, so if someone forms a belief or forms a view and has a concern that they should ring the line that's well publicised. I don't know the actual number, but it's well publicised. And then the department then looks at that information. They may do a preliminary investigation and then they may form the view that the child can remain but some things have to change, or that the child can't remain because the risk of further harm is too great.
Right.
Now, you can't just go in and remove a child. You actually have to have a court order. Yep. So the department goes to the Children's Court and they request a removal order from the magistrate and then they go in and remove that child. Now, I've been at all sorts of situations. Sometimes the police are involved. Sometimes, you know, families know that, or, you know, parents know that they're just not coping. And so, I mean, it's every time it's very distressing. Yep. But there's really a big range of situations. And I should say that, you know, a lot of kids do return home after a period of time.
Oh, just taken out.
Yeah, yep. For a period of time until, you know, till things can change in the home. There might be alcohol and other drug issues, mental health issues, family violence issues. And so, you know, if those things can change, children can return, you know, safely to that situation. There are, of course, situations that are just beyond people's capability of changing.
Yep.
And that's very, very sad. But, you know, we have probably over 9,000 children in Victoria now for whom they can't return home for the time being.
And
home
so bad. You also said something that sort of concerned me a bit. You were saying that sometimes the parents bring the children into you, but you also said that some of the children come in. So do some children find themselves in such a bad situation they come to Anchor and say, look, this is just horrible?
Yeah, so look, you know, what we typically see is sort of, you know, this is a fairly typical case, 16 years old, young person comes into our office, and the history's usually been at about 12 and 13, things have been going on at home that they couldn't cope with, and so they start, you know, sort of sleeping over at a mate's place, and then it might be somebody else's place, might be grandma's place, and then they sort of, we call it couch surfing.
Yep.
They tend to then be able to stay in school, you know, just make school work, and then it comes to a crunch point where you know, where they've been saying, they sort of say, well, no, look, you can't stay in here anymore, and they drop out of school, and then that's when we often will, they'll come to our attention, come in and ask for help, or it might be a school, or it might be Centrelink, or could be anyone really. As I mentioned to you before, Alan, a very successful program we run is called A Youth Foyer. We have a youth foyer at Lilydale. It's for young people who've had an experience of homelessness, and from the age of 16 plus up to about 23, 24, they can get 2 years of accommodation with us. And the expectation is that they re-engage with education or vocational training. So it's something for something. It's not just, you know, here's a house and here's your keys sort of thing. The expectation is that they actually do something for that accommodation.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really teaches young people you don't get anything for nothing. That actually, you know, that if you, you know, if you have an opportunity, it's great to be able to use it.
And take it.
And as I said to you earlier too, Alan, you know, the work, what underpins that program is what we call advantage thinking, which is that we lift aspirations of the young people. So a lot of these young people come in and they have no aspirations for themselves. They think they're bad, that they're not going to achieve anything in life. And the Youth Foyer gives them the opportunity to live their dreams, to dream and plan how they're going to get there, but also the environment in which they're in. Very much it's about all the other adults around them, and Anchor carries this with us, is that that disadvantage shouldn't define you into adulthood. That actually our whole community needs to have higher aspirations for people, no matter what their age is, that grow up or are in disadvantage, because they didn't actually ask to be there.
Totally agree. I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 15 minutes to one. And I'm talking to Heidi from Anchor. I guess let's get back onto this fundraiser, Heidi. You talk about some of these young people in particular, and we're not just picking on those, but we were just talking about some that bring themselves in. From having been involved in with the education department, if you haven't got a computer or an iPad, you're really going to suffer at school. So I guess part of what we should be saying to people is, look, some of this money could very well go and buy computers or laptops or whatever it is for the young people at school, because they seem to, the schools put the work on the computers and they expect the young people to take it home and do some work. And if you haven't got a computer, you're really going to suffer, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you do your education anymore without one. And I guess that, you know, kids from disadvantaged backgrounds or kids that are following their parents into homelessness, the last thing that the family's going to be thinking about, I suppose, is a, is a computer. For the young person, they're sort of more thinking about, well, how can we get out from sleeping in the car? So, yes, you're right. I'd like to certainly think that we'd have enough money in our fund to be able to resource young people, children and young people going to school as when they come into our homelessness services. So I think the fighting fund, as I say, is just something we can dip into that is really quick, really easy. No one has to sweat about it too much, and we know that we've got the money there, and so that's what we're raising money for.
And I'm not for one instant suggesting that it's all going to go on computers, but I can just see that is probably going to be quite a something that's asked for quite often.
Could well be. I mean, I think with this fund, the most important thing, Alan, is that we don't know what's coming. We actually don't know what's coming in the door or coming on the phone.
You probably don't know in 10 minutes' time.
No, that's right. And we want to be prepared because we want to go that extra mile for the people that need us. So,
all right. So where are they going to go, Heidi?
So I'm encouraging anyone and everyone to make donations to this fund.
As little as they can and as big as they can.
Exactly. Yep. The amount, doesn't matter. It's just that, that if people can find their way to support people and support Anchor to do its work, that would be fantastic. They need to go to anchor.org.au and click on the donate now button.
And that'll be easy to see.
That will be very easy to see. And all donations, $2 and above, are tax deductible. So it's a great time to do fundraising as we come up to the end of the financial year. It just might mean for people that little bit extra to claim on their tax. So it's a win-win for
everyone. It's a win-win situation. And you don't get that very often.
You don't.
All right. So please go to anchor.org.au,
which is our website.
Click on the button, matter how much or how little you can afford to give.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break and then we're going to come back. And they, at the end of the hour, Heidi will give you the phone number and other things that you can have a look at. But we want to come back and talk about foster carers, because without them, foster care doesn't exist. And you've heard so far this afternoon about, and Heidi, I'm sure, will give you the numbers again, of youth homelessness that need to go into foster care and at the moment and into the future. I think Heidi's going to tell us that it's not real bright.
She was beautiful. She signed the letter.
Welcome back to Community Connections. And I'll mention again, between 1 and 2, we've got the legal hour. So if you've got any questions, give Greg a ring. He's out there doing nothing. You hear that, Greg? He's doing nothing. If you give me a ring on 59 615 9915, 9915 9915, only too happy to find any legal questions for you. We can't listen to a case because it takes too long, but it's only general advice. But if you want anything about aspects of the law, and they're bringing in some answers from last time, so love to have you along. But we're talking to Heidi again from Anchor. Heidi, one of the things that I know you and I have spoken about this a couple of times before, foster care, and I know you're looking for foster carers, but tell us a little, very briefly, I think the numbers are rising and you're very fearful they're going to rise even further.
Yeah, look, I think it's fair to say that the numbers of children coming into care that are not able to go back to birth parents is growing. It's growing actually all over Australia. There's no numbers going down. Even though I guess Victoria and other states are favouring kinship care, there's often not family that's able to take the children. And so the only other option really is foster care. The numbers of people, you know, it's well known that the numbers of people that are willing to volunteer for anything now are decreasing rapidly.
Yep.
And I guess the number of people that actually want to be foster carers, have a child living with them in their own home, is even greater. The decrease is even greater.
Which is, it's a big thing to take a child into your home.
It's
not your own child. You haven't had them from day one.
Look, you know, people come to foster care for all sorts of reasons. But one of the predominant reasons, I guess, is that they've had some sort of contact with other foster carers, might have been part of the family, been part of the school community, but they've been touched by it and so they really understand it.
Yep.
And those are the people that are most likely to want to come and be a foster carer. What we find is that foster care itself as a concept is a bit misunderstood.
Right.
So, you know, people think, oh, well, you know, I've got to have a family or I've got to be married or got to be in a...
Was that ever the case or has it changed?
Look, I think predominantly, you know, sort of 30, 40 years ago, yes, foster carers were generally speaking, married couple.
Yep.
But nowadays, we really encourage all sorts of people, younger singles in their mid-20s, people that are, you know, not having children for whatever reason, people that have, their children have grown up, maybe they're still at home, but they're 20, 21, whatever, and they feel, those families feel that they want to give something back. I've met families that have got grown-up kids living with them, and having another little one or two come into the house is, you know, it's hard work for everybody, but it's very rewarding. Ooh. And I actually think it's, a lot of foster carers say it was the very best thing for my own children. To understand that not all children, have what they have.
Yep.
And to understand that, that they are lucky. A lot of foster carers actually say that.
Heidi, what age group, like if a foster carer volunteered today, what age groups between are they likely to get children?
Children come into foster care anywhere between 0 and 18.
So that low?
Yes. But I guess little ones are much more rare because they're probably more likely to be looked after by extended family.
Yeah.
I guess that the biggest need, I would say, is for children between about 7 and 8 and maybe 13. That cohort is a really critical one because that's the time when kids are really starting to, I guess, play out their trauma. They're not understanding what's been going on for them and so forth. But if you can get good foster carers, then that's the time they can settle, keep going with their school, integrate into high school successfully and actually have a successful life.
And so have a real input into their life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's terrific. All right, so if we've got people listening today who want to be a foster carer, we hope they are.
Yes.
How are they getting a hold of you?
Look, I mean, and look, if people just even just want to make an inquiry, we encourage people to start a conversation. We know it's a big decision. So if people would like to ring 8761 9040,
what was it?
8761 9040 and ask for foster care, they will, they'll be able to find somebody who can help them. Equally, you can go and make an inquiry on anchor.org.au. There's an inquiry
page. So they can hit the donate button first and then they can find out more.
That'd be ideal, wouldn't it? Yes. So it's easy to do. And as I say, I really encourage people who've thought about it over the years to start that conversation with us.
Sounds good to me, Heidi. Look, I really hope that you get a whole lot of money, because I really support Anchor. I think it's a terrific organisation. Yeah. So if you've got any money, please, and foster carers, look, it's not the young person's fault that they're in this situation, and their future should not be dictated to because they've had a lousy upbringing or something's gone wrong in the upbringing, is it?
Correct. They're the victims.
Yeah, absolutely. Heidi, look, it's been terrific having you in again, and I wish you well. I hope you earn plenty of money, well, as a group, to keep doing this, and I look forward to talking to you in another couple of months.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Heidi. Bye.